How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Josh Nason here on Figure Four Daily. It's July 20th, 2011, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We are joined today by King Mo. Mo Lowell is here on the line. We're going to talk a lot of MMA. Obviously, he's got a fight coming up with Hodger Gracie on September 10th. However, King Mo is a big pro wrestling fan, so we're going to talk to him about some of that as well. And Mo, how you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great, man. Had a great day of sparring. About to go do some strength conditioning in about an hour and a half. It's all good.
Now, I heard a story that you were interested in becoming a professional wrestler, and you were given the advice that because you were young, do the MMA thing now, and later on in life, maybe go back to the pro wrestling. Is that a true story?
Yes, so Shaq, my boy, the Beast, Jasper, he told me, man, because I was at my WWE tryout at OVW with Brandon Egham, and he was like, man, you know, I heard about you. You're a shooter. That's what they call this. And I heard you're a good shooter. And he's like, I heard you, you're trying to make an Olympic team. I was like, yeah. He's like, what about MMA? And I was like, I love MMA. Eventually, I'm going to do that, too. And he's like, well, man, it's like, man, you're young. I'm young. He's like, you know what? If I was you, I would try to make the Olympic team, then do fight, and after that, come to pro wrestling. And yeah. I was like, yeah. I was like, it makes some sense, man. I was like, yeah, I like that. I like what you said. So I could do all three.
Now, when you went down to Ohio Valley, how close were you actually signing a contract?
Man, let me tell you something. I was torn, man. If it was, I was about to sign, but if he didn't give me that advice, then I would have became a pro wrestler. I would have went ahead and signed with the developmental program.
What's Shad up to nowadays, by the way?
Man, I don't know, man. I talked to him a while ago, but I don't know. I guess he's just chilling, man. I know he got married. He was in Texas, and now he's in Cali. I think he's trying to do movies and stuff.
Now, when you were growing up, I know that you were a huge NWA fan and a big fan of the NWO in the mid-90s and some WWF stuff as well. And what's your first memory of pro wrestling?
All right, it's a weird story, man. When I was young, I started going to church. My mom started going to church, right? And, I was like, I didn't think nothing of it, but I thought it was all fake. So, Sting was our favorite wrestler, and Clash of Champions, Sting had a fight with Ric Flair, and I prayed. I was like, God, please, if you really love me and you care about me, please make Sting beat Ric Flair. Well, I went to my cousin's house, watched the match, and it was a time limit draw, and I was so mad. You know what I'm saying? That was my few, and then I had a. Another time I prayed, I was like, remember the Powers of Pain?
Oh, yeah.
I prayed for them to win a match, and they ended up losing. And I was crushed, though. That's when I had enough.
You may be the only person I've heard of in my entire life who ever prayed over a Powers of Pain match.
Man, hey, let me tell you something. I didn't know. Because, when I was young, I thought it was real,
Sure.
And the thing is, they're taking real punishment. The body's taking beatings. But I was like, I was into it. It was like my dream. Like Ric Flair, when I first seen Ric Flair, and I see how he dressed and how he had them females and tailor-made, He was custom. I was like, man, I want to be like Ric Flair, man. And then I seen Sting, and I was like, I want to be like Sting. And I everybody I've seen, I wanted to be like.
Now, with Shad, when he was talking to you, I mean, he'd obviously been wrestling for a while. I mean, it was part of his speech to you about going into MMA before pro wrestling. One of the deals where, this pro wrestling thing is, it's worked and everything like that, but it's going to destroy your body. So it's best to do the pro wrestling thing after you're done with the mixed martial arts.
Well, I didn't think nothing of it. I wasn't thinking about my body at the time. It was just like, look, pro wrestling will be here. It's not going nowhere. He's like, just see what you can do in MMA and the Olympics, and if you're big enough, you just do what Kurt Angle did. And I was like, you're right. I was like, Kurt Angle, because Kurt Angle was a man too. And I was like, yeah, you're right. So I figured, maybe I could get some crossover appeal, but, who knows now. I talked to Briscoe here now on Facebook, but, I guess after I'm done MMA, I'm going to see what I can do.
Now, I know that at one point at Nationals, you actually got a chance to meet Ric Flair. And how was that experience?
Man, I met. It was a small national tournament in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and his son was wrestling. And I seen him. I almost fainted, though. I was like, my legs are all weak, and I was like, all right, that's the nature boy. So I do whatever it took to walk past my purpose, you know what I'm saying? So I was like going to the bathroom, just doing stupid things to walk past him. And then finally, I walked past him, I kind of got his attention. I went up and I shook his hand. I ain't nothing, he's bigger than what I expected.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is, Daniel Cormier is the same term, and he told me he did the same thing. He's like, man, I was trying to do whatever I took to get his attention so I can go up and shake his hand. It was crazy, man. Ric Flair, man, man, if I could meet him again and actually like conversing with him, it'd be amazing.
Now, was he as cool in person as you expected?
Well, he was pretty laid back. You know, he was there for it. I really couldn't talk to him because he was there because his son was wrestling. But, you know, he was still, you know, everyone came up to him and he was, like, receptive and was taking everybody's hand and was smiling. So some people are just assholes. So, you know, they might be like, yeah, you know, shutting you off. But he was, like, accepting everybody. So
sure.
It was cool.
One last thing here before we get into some of the MMA talk. CM Punk, obviously, is the talk of the wrestling world of late. And you watched some of that lately, and what are your thoughts?
Let me tell you something. CM Punk changed the game up.
He changed the game up, man.
Hey, let me tell you something. He's amazing. I was really, you know, the whole Nexus line, I wasn't sure. And I was like, he was still cool. What he's doing now changed the game up. It was amazing.
So talking about, you know, kind of the crossover in the MMA, one of the things that you're really well known for is your ring entrances. And unfortunately, you know, Strikeforce doesn't seem to show them as much as we'd like, but how much of that is influenced from your past watching wrestling?
All of it, other than the rose petals, like, you know, a few things came from Coming to America. A few things came from, like, you know, some mobster stuff. But all of it, like, to me, the whole thing, the most successful fighters, you know, I feel like will have some type of, in the long run, will have some type of pro wrestling gimmick, in a sense. They'll have some, you know, cause like, look at Chael Sonnen. Chael Sonnen is smooth. Koscheck is smooth. You know, those guys that have the charisma, you know, to make a crowd either love or hate you, that's what you have to have in pro wrestling. If you're one of those guys like, Nathan Marquardt's a nice guy, you know what I'm saying? Great wrestler, great fighter, but sometimes, like, he's like, new, everyone thinks about him, like, you know, he's a nice guy. But in pro wrestling, if you have that, he's a nice guy type thing, people just won't cheer for you. You have to polarize the audience. You know, make them love you or make them hate you. And Stone Cold, Eddie Guerrero, and even The Rock was one, you know, some of the best Ric Flair. You know, some of the best at that.
So for your own career, I mean, there's so many guys that don't seem to figure that out. That, I mean, you're trying to sell yourself as a personality, so, you know, you're going to get booked in bigger fights. People are going to want to pay to see you on pay-per-view and so on and so forth. When did you figure that out in your career? Because you haven't been fighting for that long, but when did that click that, you know, you have to sell yourself almost as a character as much as a fighter in the cage?
Man, I was doing that in wrestling when I was wrestling. You know, that's the thing. I've always been, had that personality. You know, ever since I was, the pro wrestling gave me the ideas, you know what I'm saying? And I was thinking, like, you have to be a little different, and you have to figure out a way to sell yourself. Like, Mayhem does the same thing. I feel like you have to be bigger than life to a certain extent.
So one of the things, you know, we'll talk about Hodger Gracie here in a few minutes, but one of the things interesting recently is that you wanted to fight Rich Franklin when Antonio Rogério Nogueira had to bow out of the fight at UFC 133. I know you had mentioned on Twitter, was there any serious talk of that? I know there's got a lot of things now because, you know, guys not crossing over from Strikeforce to UFC, but did anything ever come of that, or was it just basically you kind of throwing it out that you would like to fight him in that co-main event spot?
I just threw it out there, but nothing came of it. I just threw it out there. We can see what happens, but nothing came of it.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess talking about the, you know, the Strikeforce UFC relationship, you know, we talked to Tim Kennedy a few weeks ago about how, you know, his transition's been, and interesting getting, you know, your perspective on that as far as, you know, since Zuffa has bought out a Strikeforce, kind of what your reflections of that have been, you know, positive, negative, and how that's gone for you.
And nothing's really changed, man. I can't tell the difference, but other than, like, I don't know. I really can't tell the difference, you know, because we're still in Strikeforce. Nothing's changed. You know, it's still the same. We're still fighting Strikeforce fighters. Still fighting Strikeforce. Thing is, elbows. We got elbows now, so that's about it. Nothing's really changed to me.
So let's talk a little bit about your upcoming fight with Hodger Gracie. It got moved back to September 10th, and you mentioned that you're, you know, obviously in training right now, and he's obviously known for being a jiu-jitsu ace and so on, and obviously you're known for, you know, being a great ground game as well, but also being able to throw some as well. What are you really focusing on for this fight against Hodger?
I'm doing a lot of jiu-jitsu, stuff, you know. And I'm just working on everything, jiu-jitsu, so stand-up. I'm working in the gi. You know, I'm doing a lot of stuff, you know what I'm saying? Just try to be prepared in for every situation.
Now, as far as training in the gi and training jiu-jitsu and that sort of thing, has it been a tough transition, an easy transition, kind of somewhere in the middle as a guy who did amateur wrestling for so long? And, you know, obviously amateur wrestling, stay off your back. Jiu-jitsu, you're on your back. How's it been training jiu-jitsu?
Not so big, you know what I'm saying? It's tough, but, you know, when you're willing to learn, it's an easy transition, and I'm willing to learn, so it hasn't been that hard for me at all.
Now, the first day you put on that gi, and everyone's there, and all of a sudden you're being choked with your own outfit. I mean, was that kind of an eye-opening experience for you?
That was funny to me, because I thought I was okay, and I heard my heart beat, and next thing I know, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I was out? No, I wasn't. Man, I wasn't out. What are you talking about?
Now, going back to your amateur career, you had not just things that people know about, but there were a lot of things in your amateur career that, for example, apparently there was a stretch where you went 3 straight months wrestling all over the world, and you never were home during that entire period. Tell us a little bit about the itinerary during that 3 months.
Man, it was hell. You know what I'm saying? It was like about 2 months, 2.5 months, but it was hell. I flew to Iran. Actually, I flew to Dubai. I lived in Dubai. Flew to Iran. Iran was cool. Won the tournament. Flew from Iran back to Dubai. Loved Dubai. Flew from Dubai to Moscow. That's when things changed. Because we went from tropical to cold. I was miserable. from there, I went from Moscow to even colder in Siberia and Krasnoyarsk. And that was even more miserable. It was so miserable, like, your teardrops freeze your face. Like, when you go outside, you know, your eyes start watering, and then your tears just freeze. You know what I'm saying? And that was miserable. That was terrible. Then I flew back. That was, mind you, from Moscow to Krasnoyarsk, it was like a 7-hour flight. You know what I'm saying? I went to that tournament, wrestled there, flew from Krasnoyarsk back to Moscow. Didn't like it. Flew from Moscow to Chechnya. I was in Chechnya. That was cool, you know, they treated me good. We had a tough tournament, a tough dual meet. It was the USA versus Team Russia and USA versus Team Chechnya, actually Team Dagestan. And we got beat there. Flew back from Chechnya to Moscow. And then from Moscow, we flew to the United States. Right when I got home, I had to fly to Denver. Then I flew to Chicago the next day to wrestle in the Chicago Cup, and then I flew back to Denver. I was gone, man. I feel like I was like in a time machine, you know what I'm saying? Like I was stuck in time, because when I came back, everything just felt so different.
Now, during the, I don't know if it was during that particular stretch, but at one point in Russia, tell the story about the day that you were to wrestle one of the Russian wrestlers, and apparently the place was evacuated, and they found a dirty bomb on the premises.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy. Back in 2005. You know, it was me, Daniel Cormier, Tolly Thompson, Sammy Hens. We had a good team out there. You know, we were in Chechnya. You know, we went from the hotel to the venue, and it was like a 3 or 4 hour drive. But I noticed like every 60, 70 miles, we do a checkpoint. And I started noticing like people out in the mountains with guns. So you know, I was thinking that's none of it. We get to the venue, we're feeling good, we're warming up. They're like, all right, tournament's going to start in 1 hour. So, all right, we're warming up, we're chilling, talking. Then they're like, we have to evacuate the premises. So we evacuate the premises, thinking nothing of it. 3 hours passes, you know. They're like, all right, we're going to start the tournament in another hour. So we go back in the venue, we start wrestling. Think nothing of it, right? The next day, our interpreter has a newspaper. Read the newspaper was like, guys, he dodged the bullet. And we're like, what? He's like, you see these pails? It was like these paint pails. It was like 5 of them. They were like shrapnel bombs.
Jesus.
Set in the venue where they blow up, and they found them.
It's amazing because you read about bomb threats and you know, sometimes you hear about them in a local school or something like that. And, you know, it seems like 8 times out of 10, it's a false alarm. There was no actual bomb there. But in this situation, there was a bomb there that would have blown you guys up.
Yeah.
fast.
It was crazy, man. I was like, damn, we dodged a bullet. But I was like, you know, when you think about it, like, we could have died.
Yeah.
You know.
Now did they ever figure out, was this something that involved the wrestling meet, where they were, or was it just event?
It was a random event, because I guess they're at war. They're kind of at some type of war. You know, something. There's some type of war going on over there in that area, in that region. I don't know what's going on, but, you know, before we got there, they said, like, about 40 police officers got killed and all sorts of stuff was going on. So I really don't know. It's just something crazy going on over there.
Wanted to get your thoughts as well on drug testing. You've got some interesting views, I've been told. Not a fan of athletic commissions doing the drug testing. What is your idea as far as how this should be handled?
Well, you know, the thing is, like, you know, if everyone was giving Floyd, wanted to do USADA. If you can afford USADA, you know, but now after I've seen the prices of USADA, ain't nobody affording that except for the Pacquiao. But, you know, USADA, you know, a lot of drug testing, actually USADA drug testing is, like, top-notch. Because there's no, you know, it's random, and there's no way you can get by with some performance enhancements.
What are your thoughts as far as performance-enhancing drugs in MMA? I mean, there are a lot of guys, you talk to some fighters, and they say, oh, my God, everybody's doing it. And then you talk to other guys, and they say, about half. And then, you know, you got some other guys in there that, you know, some that say very, very few. Where do you stand as far as what percentage of fighters do you think are on something at this point?
I have no idea, because let me tell you something. Most fighters don't make that much money. You know what I'm saying? I think that stuff might be expensive. And two, if they're on something, it's probably fake. Because you can't afford, you know what I'm saying? Like, guys aren't that rich. So if they're buying anything, it's cheap. And it's probably fake.
So you would fall into the camp.
That's what I'm assuming. I really don't know. If I could say a number, I'd be like, hey, it's 29%, but I really have no idea.
29. All right. That's a good answer.
So you had you started your career in Japan in Sengoku back in fall of 2008. Wondering how you transitioned from amateur wrestling into MMA and who got you into it.
I was always going to transition over, you know what I'm saying, because of money. It's more than wrestling. And I had a lot of people, you know, I was cornering fighters like in 1999, 2000, like guys like Jeff Lindsay. He fought in the USWF, and I cornered with Hugh Edwards, I cornered with King of the Cage. And I was in college still. I was like a sophomore in college. I was his coach. I was his valet tudo or NHB coach back in them days. That's what they called it. So I was his coach. And it wasn't mixed martial arts back when I was cornering these fighters. So I always knew I was going to fight eventually because, you know, I love boxing. I have a love for boxing. Boxing is my favorite sport. I'll watch boxing over MMA. So,
who do you like watching in boxing?
Sergio Martinez, Emmanuel Augustus. I love a bunch of Canelo, Floyd, Tavoris Cloud, Brian Vera. You know, the list goes on. You know, I watch pretty much everybody.
So from someone that obviously is, you know, in MMA and is now, you know, an employee of one of the, you know, obviously the biggest MMA organization in the world. You've seen how MMA has grown in boxing in a lot of ways. Is kind of, you know, they've kind of shot themselves in the foot and not promoted well and so on. Interesting to get your take on that and, like, what you would do to, I guess, improve boxing and, if anything, you know, what your current, you know, views are. And obviously, you know, the Pacquiao's and Mayweather's are big pay-per-view draws, but the other guys are kind of lagging a little bit, and especially when it comes to the mainstream fans.
Well, the thing is, like, MMA's not a mainstream yet, you know what I'm saying? Like, boxing is a little more mainstream as far as the names, like Pacquiao and Floyd, Bernard Hopkins. The thing is, like, MMA is, like, it's not mainstream just yet. And as far as, like, boxing, I don't think it shot itself in the foot, because you look at the paydays for a boxer at my level, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, right now it's former champion. You look at Andre Berto. Berto's making $1 million+ a fight, you know what I'm saying? I'm not making $1 million, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't know if they're shooting themselves in the foot, but just like to some MMA fans, they just would turn their turn off by boxing and vice versa. I accept both. I love boxing, kickboxing, and MMA. So I'm not one of those guys who like against boxing because I'm an MMA fan. Some people like that, but I think they're ignorant.
So what do you think about James Toney when he first decided to take on Randy Couture?
Yeah, well, you know, he just wanted a payday and wanted to guess he thought he could win, but It's a different sport, man, because that's like me. That's like us putting Randy in the ring with James Toney. You know, that'd be a massacre. So it's a different sport, man. You just can't – it's hard to have that crossover. It's hard to – you know, if he was a kickboxer, he'd have a better chance. But still, it'd be hard for him.
So you competed once for M1. You know, you beat a MMA name, obviously, in Mark Kerr. You got to 5-0. You got to call the Strike Force, win a couple fights – or win a fight there. And then you got a shot against Gegard Mousasi. For the light heavyweight championship, you beat him over five rounds. You know, you were sitting there at 7-0, still really young in your career, and you were a champion. And I just, you know, interested in what, you know, kind of what your mindset was at the time. Did you think that a lot of this stuff is coming almost too soon? Do you feel it was the right time in your career? And kind of what was going through your head at that moment, you know, a little over a year ago when you were a champion of Strikeforce?
I mean, I became a champion of Strikeforce a little less than half a year and a half in my career, kind of fast. But I didn't know. I really don't know. I just didn't think anything of it. But now I look back, it was pretty fast. But I just got to keep on improving and working on my skills. You know what I'm saying? It comes down to it. I can't look back in the past and really say anything. But it was pretty fast. But hey, things happen.
When did you first get into amateur wrestling? Were you one of those guys that big pro wrestling fan, heard there was a wrestling program and thought, my God, I'll do that, and then you show up and there's no ring?
Nah, man. What happened was I missed a tackle in the playoffs, and the coach was like, hey, all the defense needs to work on your tackling. Report to wrestling in 2 weeks at 8 in the morning. That's what happened.
Report to wrestling.
Yep.
Now, you did it obviously through high school and college and all the way to the top. When did you first see mixed martial arts? Was it years ago back in the Pride days, or when did you first start watching it?
Man, I saw it before I really started wrestling. I saw it a year before I started wrestling. I was in ninth grade, man. And I heard people saying, my boy's like, hey, that Ultra Fight stuff. It's on at Blockbuster, so I rented it, you know what I'm saying? And I watched it, and ever since then I've been hooked.
So these were like the early UFCs you saw?
Yeah, and then after that, I had a cat, there was one cat, he used to get bootleg stuff, so he was an Asian cat, and he used to get the bootleg, like K-1 and Japan's Tito fights. I watched it, and I was like, oh, damn, they do that stuff in Japan, too? I didn't know that better.
So in August of 2009, or actually it had been prior to that, but that was the date of the fight, when you were told, you're going to fight Mark Kerr, were you kind of like, holy shit, Mark Kerr? Because, you know, he was, you know, huge name back in the day, and then he kind of fell off the cliff. But was that like a big deal to be able to fight somebody that maybe you grew up watching?
Nah, because really, I knew Mark Kerr, he was tough, but I went to Kevin Jackson. You know what I'm saying? And I knew Mark Kerr from wrestling. So I seen some of his tapes, and I watched some of his fights. I seen some stuff that, you know, he was a beast, but then when you watch how he moves, he just didn't move that good.
That was your fastest fight of all time. 25 seconds you finished him off. And, I mean, what was that like, just being able to, you train so hard, you go in there, and 25 seconds later, it's over? Were you one of those guys that, man, I want to go back to the locker room and spar some more?
Mm-mm. I was one of the guys like, hey, where's my check? I'm going to cash it. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Now, speaking of checks, I would presume that at some point you'd like to make the move to UFC, where you get some big bonus checks for, knockout of the night and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know what's happening with that whole thing. Like, I guess we'll see when it happens. I'll really make the move. I'm not gonna dwell on it because some people are like, you know, when do you move to the UFC? Well, if I knew, I'd tell you. I don't know anything's going on with the UFC and Strikeforce.
Sure.
I don't know what's going on, so it's whatever. I don't dwell on it at all.
Now, you missed some time with knee surgery, and what are some of the injuries during your career that you've suffered? Is that the worst injury that you've had that required surgery, or have there been injuries up and down the up and down your career?
No, just two knee surgeries, you know, just about it.
Yeah, were they scopes, or what,
no,
what happened?
Big ACL.
Ooh. And how are you feeling these days?
Oh, they feel good.
Feel good?
No, it's not good. They feel good because the thing is, the first time I had it, it was not, my body just rejected the cadaver, so I didn't know I was fighting with no ACL.
I think that Frank Shamrock did that for a while. It didn't work out very well for him.
Yeah, it sucks. You can't throw a jab, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, you have to fight through it.
Now, the King Mo moniker, is it Jerry Lawler, King Haku? Is there a particular king that you pattern yourself after?
Nah, but if I can be like any king, it'd be King Book. You know what I'm saying?
King Booker?
King Booker, yeah.
That's good a one as any there. Who are who are some of your favorite, I mean, just purely as a fan, in both pro wrestling and MMA, who are like some of your favorite wrestlers and some of your favorite fighters?
Favorite wrestlers? Oh, man, Arn Anderson, Nikita Koloff, you know, Ric Flair, Booker T, Stone Cold, The Rock, Eddie Guerrero, rest in peace. You know, now it's CM Punk, you know what I'm saying? I like R-Truth, too. I ain't gonna lie, man. I like R-Truth now because he flipped the script. You know, the Great Muta. I love the Great Muta, too. You know, it's so many. And fighters now, like, I have a lot of, you know, I don't have just a favorite fighter. You know, I have a lot of fighters I watch, you know, as far as, like, MMA and kickboxing and boxing. I admire all the fighters, actually, because we're all doing the same thing. We're all trying to get paid. We're all trying to go out there and win these fights.
I guess more of the question would be, like, is there a particular fighter where if you find out this guy's fighting, it's just like, I am not missing this fight. This guy either entertains me or, you know, I love his character or anything like that. Is there anybody that really sticks out to you?
No, that's one of my boys. That's it. You know what I'm saying? There's no bill, but, like, you know, Rashad, I watch him fight. Cormier, I would watch him fight. You know, Jason High, just my boys. You know what I'm saying? I would watch my boys fight. Chael, you know, that's about it, really.
What was it like stepping up from a Division II school, the Central Oklahoma, to the Division I Oklahoma State? Was it you had Ben Roller there, you had Jake Rosholt. Was that like a, I mean, what was it like for you as far as taking that step up?
Not a big deal, because I was beating most of the guys from D1 anyway when I was at D2s. I beat them all. I was smashing them, as a matter of fact.
Got a couple of questions here from the our message board here. As well, do you use yourself when you play EA Sports MMA?
No, I don't. Real talk, I haven't had a chance to play a video game too much anymore. You know, I don't really use myself at all. I don't really play it no more.
All right, were you a video game fan? Because, you know, some fighters end up in the video game when they're just like, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to them in their lives, and other guys, you know, they don't really care.
Real talk, I was big fan of, like, Double Dragon and stuff like that. But after that, I couldn't even...
Wow. Double Dragon.
Yeah. That's my favorite game, Double Dragon. I used to beat up them girls, the Lindas, beat them up, take their whips, and just...
Want to talk about your friendship with Rashad Evans, someone that you mentioned before, that you're really good friends, you've trained with him, and... It's kind of how that relationship started, honestly, but guys without the wrestling background, but how you guys met and kind of how that friendship, how that came to be.
We met in college, wrestling, you know, Oklahoma State, we smashed them in a dual meet, and I saw him hitting the bag, and I was like, you going to fight? He was like, yep. I was like, I'm going to fight, too. I was like, after I'm done wrestling, let's meet up, man. Let's stay in touch. And we kept in touch, and I remember seeing him also fight him. After that, I saw a message on MySpace. That's what MySpace was big. And he's like, "Yeah, man, let's get back, let's get this thing going. We ain't done wrestling, you know what I'm saying? Let's get together, and you know, if I need your help, you know, I'm gonna call you." And we've stayed in contact ever since.
So is it? I mean, I assume, you know, being his friend, and it must be pretty tough for him over the past, you know, year and a half to have all these, you know, his injuries and then fights pull out. He had a title shot, then that went away. I mean, from your perspective in talking with him and working with him, how's his mental preparation been and mental state of mind here over the last year and a half?
You know what? He's back. He's on track. You know, he's had, he had a tough stretch with that 6-week stretch when he got hurt, but he's back on track, man. He's focused. He's ready to smash Tito.
So one of the people I know that you're not friends with would be Rampage Jackson. I know you've had some comments about him. And how did these issues start? And kind of how is that? How did this come to be that both of you guys seem to not really like each other that much?
Man, he's I don't know what to say, man. All I can say is when y'all meet him just when you're out and about, meet him and tell me what you think about him. You know what I'm saying? Because at first we were cool, but he's sensitive, you know what I'm saying? He was trying to make fun of me, I made fun of him, and he got mad. So, obviously he can dish it out, but he can't take it. And then he tried to play me by talking down on me and talking trash about me on his website. And then when I fired back, he got mad again. So, you know, he's kind of sensitive, though. That's what it comes down to. And a lot of these dumbass fans, they don't know the story, but they just want to pick sides. That's what they don't like about some of these MMA fans. They try to seem too important. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm joking with somebody or if I'm just playing around with somebody on Twitter, they like to jump in and try to talk trash back to me when they don't know that me and, like, Gerald Harris and me and Derek Brunson are just joking. They think that just because of fighters, we always have to be in fighting mode and be serious and always want to fight each other, and that's not the case.
Yeah, I noticed on Twitter that, I mean, you're obviously really you're active on your Twitter and things like that. You think that people just kind of misunderstand some of the stuff on Twitter just because obviously they're not hearing you actually say it, and they kind of just take that and assume that there's heat there?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, like, a lot of MMA news is like TMZ gossip. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think they try too hard to find news, and people want to be in the midst of a breaking story, and it's just, you know, they'll take whatever they can take and just run with it.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about real quick and kind of give you a chance to clear the air and whatever, about John Jones. Was there some sort of misconception or some sort of comments you had made about him recently as well?
A while ago, not recently, but just like as far as like the whole, you know, I feel like he's trying to play Rashad by reneging. He went out first saying he wouldn't fight Rashad because Rashad is one of his boys or whatnot, and then he said he wouldn't fight Rashad, and it made Rashad look like a punk, and then the whole text message thing, like how Rashad said something about him on text message, he showed it to the media, and to me that's kind of like feminine, but, you know, if he wants to do that, he can do that. I ain't about that.
Yeah, I've actually, you know, interviewed Rashad before and so on. I don't understand why people don't seem to like him. It's so strange. You know, he gets booed all over the place, and, I mean, all he does is win. He carries himself in a great way, but for whatever reason, fans just don't seem to take to Rashad Evans. I don't get it.
I think probably, I don't know, maybe they want to be a clown. You know, and he's not going to play himself. So that's what it comes down to.
Got one last question here. Let's say that your MMA career ends, you decide to go to Ohio Valley, you sign your contract with WWE, it's time to debut. What is your pro wrestling gimmick? Do you go with King Mo, or did you have something that growing up you always thought, if I ever become a pro wrestler, this is what I'm going to be?
I don't know, man, because I first want to be like a black Nikita Koloff, but then I could be like Goldberg, but Goldberg can't wrestle. I'm thinking I want to be like Arn Anderson, the enforcer, because Arn Anderson was raw. I love Arn Anderson, man. He's so underrated.
I like the idea of a black Nikita Koloff.
Yeah, Nikita Koloff.
The one I never heard that one before. Certainly be unique. Let's get some plugs in here. If you got a website, Twitter, the whole nine yards, and what's coming up?
Man, yeah, just hit me up, man. I'm at KingMoFH. And then if you want, you can do right into my blog, you know, the King Mo Weekly Grind on fighthype.com. You know, so you can hit me up on either one.
Awesome. And, of course, the next big fight, Hodger Gracie, September 10th, 2011, Strike Force 36. Best of luck to you with that. And thanks a lot for doing the show. Really appreciate it, and best of luck with your career.
All right, thanks, bro. I appreciate it, man.
All right, thanks very much. And, of course, thanks, everybody, for listening. We shall talk to you again after a while.